Please join us as we interview the highly successful creators of the Neverwinter Nights 1 Persistent World, The Higher Ground.
It's the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community, by the community. You can find us online at NeverwinterNightsPodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hi, this is Jeff, a.k.a. Funky Swerve, from Higher Ground, and my co-admin is Doug, a.k.a. Chaos, also of Higher Ground.
Jastin here from the Realms of Trinity.
This is Aroen, a.k.a. DM Silver Adept of the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
Hey, this is Brian, a.k.a. Sir Brian from the Realms of Trinity and Neverwinter Nights Podcast. And you're listening to the 146th episode of the Neverwinter Nights Podcast, the podcast all about the Neverwinter Nights series of role-playing games. Well, we got a really short news segment this time. We have a very in-depth interview with the Higher Ground guys for Neverwinter Nights 1 Persistent World. It's fantastic, a ton of information, so we're not going to go long-winded today on the news. But we do have some important news we want to get into, because the Hall of Fame inductions on the IGN Vault only come out once a month, and they are really a great honor for people who put out 10 on the IGN Vault for community. And when they finally do get 25 votes, in some cases it takes a long time, it's really fulfilling, and it's a sense of accomplishment for the authors who spent a lot of time and effort putting quality content out for everybody to enjoy. So we're going to go into the news segment right now. For Neverwinter Nights 2 Hall of Fame for August 2011, Jason's going to get started with Game World.
Okay, the new Neverwinter Nights 2 Game Worlds that made the Hall of Fame this month. We have the Path of Evil campaign by Kamal with a score of 9.41. We also have Howls in the Dark by Razvar with a score of 8.77. And we have a third one, Goblin Bandits of the Delambir Route by Kevin Carr with a score of 8.70.
And for Neverwinter Nights 2 Blueprints, we have Storytellers Hobbits NPCs by, you guessed it, the Storyteller, 01. And it has a score of 9.66.
For Half Packs, we have Mines Caverns Override with Ceilings and Lava Pits by Zerwerculus with a score of 9.95. Aligned Head Visual Effects by Ipenshear with a score of 9.97, and Sci-Fi Placeables Bonanza by Jez and various other offers with a score of 10.
And for Neverwinter Nights 1 models, we have updated Werewolf model by Worm with a score of 9.78. For Neverwinter Nights 1 modules, we have Bad Day at Castle Eldath by Tony Tobin with a score of 8.60. The Doom of Artorias Dukar by Dave Thorson with a score of 8.11. And finally, Sill Street Nail V2.01 by Abaddon with a score of 8.11.
And in the Neverwinter Nights other category, we have a PRC Neverwinter script compiler version 2.0 by the PRC. The score on this one is 9.95. And we have a Neverwinter Nights Game World, The Forgotten Realms, The North version 3 by Delantriel and Steel Butterfly with a score of 10.
That's a perfect 10, or as they would say, flawless victory. So, you know, thanks again for, you know, to the content creators of these fine pieces of work that got the Hall of Fame in. You know, keep them coming. And speaking of, before we get into the interview, of custom content, we have our Neverwinter Nights 2 custom creature model 2011 competition underway. Deadlines for that submissions are on 9/1. If you have any questions or things that you'd like to ask about the submissions or this contest, please feel free to do so on our forums and or our Facebook page. You can leave questions or messages there as well for us. You know, we'd love to have somebody, you know, guys get out there and make some good Neverwinter Nights 2 creature models. The community would greatly appreciate it, and I think it would really continue the progression of the Neverwinter Nights 2 game platform for Persistent Worlds module creators and just about anything else. So I think if anybody out there is listening to this and has some skills in the area and wants to put up anything in the sense of Neverwinter Nights 2 creature models, please feel free to do so. I mean, you pick up some lore and we've talked about in the past. It doesn't have to be something specifically from the Monstrous Manual. You can come up with your own stuff. So this is a good opportunity to get it out there. You know, we will obviously, hopefully we get as many submissions as possible for this so that, you know, we have a lot of good content to put out there. So, and with that, before we close out and get moving to the interview, BioWare Community Server is still down. I have gotten out to several Persistent Worlds for Neverwinter Nights 2 now to fix for that on their end to prevent accounts from being hijacked by other players. If you have any questions, if you're a Persistent World runner and you'd like to have a little bit of assistance in that area, feel free also to leave me a personal message on the Realms of Trinity forums. My account is bbloom, and I'd be happy to send you some code to discuss your situation architecturally, because every server is going to be a little bit different the way they're implementing. But as long as you're using the NWNX and that you're currently recording the player's CD key when they log in, that's all you would need. And I can pass you off some of the information that will help keep your server from getting hijacked. So, all right. Hey, you guys got anything else for the podcast?
Nope. Not overly. I think we're ready to present.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good. Let's get the interview started with Higher Ground. Hey, Jeff, thanks for coming on the show. It's a pleasure to have you. Classic Neverwinter Nights 1 Persistent World, been around a long time. Great to have you on the show and for the community.
Thanks. Good to be here. Appreciate the chance.
Absolutely. Can you start out, tell us about yourself a little bit? You can get as personal as you want, or you can stick to your Neverwinter stuff, or both.
Sure, absolutely. I'll start with myself. For my own part, I started playing D&D when I was either 6 or 7. I honestly don't remember. My mom signed me up for a summer camp where they taught the original box set and DM'd it, and I rolled up a fighter with like a 12 strength, I think. It was original basic D&D, not AD&D. So I've been doing this for a long, long time. After that, I basically started DMing, I think, 2 years later. I bought up all the source books and just devoured them. I loved them. I loved reading fantasy. I was a big fan of Tolkien. My dad read me The Hobbit while I was on his lap at like age 4 or 5. So I got into fantasy at a very, very young age. And then DM'd, I think, starting around age 9 through age 19 or 20. So for quite a long time. And I carry a lot of that pen and paper experience with me to this day. I didn't actually wind up wanting to make a roleplay server, though, because I thought that the game medium suited itself much better for action than it did anything else. Some of my background, I started playing Neverwinter Nights pretty much a couple weeks after it came out. Played it single player pretty much the first 2 or 3 years I played it. Then I started looking at multiplayer games while I was actually away doing my professional degree. I was going to law school at the time. From there, I found Higher Ground. It was the second server I'd ever logged into. This was in, I want to say, mid to late 2004. At that point, they had, I think his name was Rip, who was the admin, and I took over from him in May of 2005. At that point, it was just that I'd been playing on the server. I enjoyed it. I had some idea what the core mechanics, the rules of the game were, and so I was knowledgeable enough to help other players. Plus, I was just friendly with Rip. From there, Ishii has sort of grown organically from that point. We started out with a certain set of circumstances which involved fairly high magic. Shortly thereafter, I decided I really, really wanted to do level 60 just to be able to expand the play experience, and we sort of evolved out our magic system and our equipment from that point. So we wound up being high magic without ever really having deliberately aimed at that. Okay, for Achaeus' part, he is a professional programmer in his daytime life, and when he gets a chance, he plays online games to unwind. He's always been interested in role-playing, but since he's deaf, playing tabletop is very difficult for him. He's played several campaigns of various games on IRC in the past, as well as being a mudder since the early 90s. In around 2006 or 2007, I don't remember which, we had just released The Hells, which were sort of the premiere level 60 area for the server. So legendary levels had been out a while. I didn't realize at first just how talented he was. And, you know, I started out doing the same things I started other, you know, developers out doing. And pretty much within a week or so, I realized that he was a much better coder than I was, which was, you know, a little bit humbling, but you know, it was also fantastic to have someone that talented on board. Yeah, his being a professional coder made a world of difference to the persistent world to me, because he was able to teach me quite a lot. I'm entirely self-taught on Neverwinter Script. I started learning in 2004. That was the first time I opened either the DM client or the toolset. Yeah, so entirely self-taught. I later taught myself C and tiny smatterings of Perl in other languages, mainly in the course of learning LitoScript back when we used it. Yeah, I mean, I may have come before KS, but he's definitely contributed at least as much I have in less time than I have. He's just phenomenal as a dev.
Yeah, that's great when you have such a skilled resource that comes online and can, you know, contribute to your project like that.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not just the content he's contributed, it's the organization. Not just the skills, but the actual organization of software. Like, he set us up on a version repository system so that we can all work on the mod at the same time without having to worry about files getting overwritten. We basically sync the mod to the main repository whenever we make a change, and basically versioning handles any conflicts, so there usually aren't any, because we're typically working on different things at different times. And pretty much everything in the mod except the areas is in that Subversion repo. So he basically made it so that we can work on anything at any time. It's just fantastic. So we've got, I think, 5 or 6 different devs set up using the same repo right now. I'm the most active one at this point. Akaeus has been in the past when he's been less busy with real life. But yeah, so he contributed that. I mean, he's structured our... pretty much totally rewrote our spell system, structured it so that it was much easier to upgrade. All of our spells, for instance, run on a single struct called getSpellInfo. The way he's organized his coding and, you know, and taught me to do the same has just saved immense amounts of time organizationally. I can't even imagine where I'd be without him.
Oh, no.
Literally, we would probably not be around anymore.
What got you interested in Higher Ground specifically, and what was kind of the vision of the server?
Yeah, well, as I sort of mentioned earlier, it's not so much a vision, how I planned it, as just sort of how it unfolded. It was a second PW that I played on, and it was a place that I enjoyed playing. It was basically mostly action. And to continue, basically, the second place I'd ever played, so I didn't have a huge amount of perspective at that time. The place I had played before, I'm not going to mention by name, it's not online anymore, but I had a pretty bad experience there, and it did sort of shape how I came to Higher Ground and how I approached building. Basically, the devs there didn't put a lot of effort into coding rules. They just sort of set them out, and you could violate them without even being aware of it and basically get spanked for doing so. And I actually came to a point where the guy decided I was carrying too much loot, because I'm a bit of a pack rat, and just started plucking things out of my inventory at random, which I took issue with, so I left there. And at that point, I decided that one of the things I would do down the road, well, I guess I didn't decide it at that point, but that was basically the impetus for my take on our rule system, which is to code everything possible, to be as fair as possible to the players. If we can't code it, we generally will not make it a rule. We don't punish players who exploit. We will sometimes, if the exploit is egregiously bad, sort of remove their unjust enrichments. We won't, like, take anything away from them. Like, say there was a chest that was spawning, like, some really, really rare item. Actually, this happened. Players figured out how to solo to the chest. It was intended to be an area of 5 thing, and they figured out how they could solo to it using damage shields, using a certain build, and get the item. we wound up letting the players who were doing this keep the items in this instance. They were called Planeswalker rings, and they are basically very nice because they grant the players a choice of an elemental immunity, a very large amount of the elemental immunity, as well as the ability to breathe water and to levitate. We have various environments around the server that require water breathing, levitation, firewalking, and pass wall. That ring grants two of them right off the bat, so it's a very, very nice ring to have. We had players basically not technically exploiting their way to it, but getting to it in a much easier way than was intended. Rather than taking it away from them, we just made it much harder to get to. So that's one of the sort of philosophies that we build with. We try to respect our players' time as much as possible, treat them like adults unless they really, really, really don't want to be treated like adults. So, I mean, that experience definitely shaped at least that part of my outlook on developing Higher Ground. As for, you know, the rest of where it came from, it sort of grew organically from what was already there. They Higher Ground is based on Path of Ascension by Abandoned Worlds, and I mean, we've still got that in the intro message. We try to, you know, respect our roots, as it were, but we already had sort of, you know, a setting really, and, you know, a fair amount of areas. So it was really more a question of building on that. Ascension, where AW built their world, isn't really placed in any setting. We kind of retrofitted it to Forgotten Realms so we could add on our own content after the fact. And they had, you know, some of the typical Forgotten Realms stuff, but it wasn't explicitly placed anywhere in the realms. So really, we just built on their vision and turned it into a fairly high-powered action server, partly because that's what I thought, you know, the game suited best in terms of AD&D. I think role-playing is a little bit tricky when done via computer. I think I prefer live role-playing, all in all. So that's
yeah,
why
there's a lot of confusion that gets interjected a lot of times, too, with the complexity of the rules of the role playing. I mean, I know I'm sure you notice yourself. You go out there and look at other places on Neverwinter 1 or 2, for that matter. It doesn't really matter because, mm-hmm. It, like you said, it's the computer venue of role play.
Yeah.
There's a lot of rules that are written, and the way they're enforced is pretty tricky.
Yeah.
And it's subject to interpretation as well.
Yeah.
Yep. So
So I mean, that's something that I sort of shied away from because of my experience. So yeah, there's that. But I guess I really am still sort of a fan of the you know, person to person in the flesh experience when it comes to actual role playing, and I tend to view Neverwinter Nights and or at least Higher Ground as more of a venue for, you know, kind of relaxing, you know, not so much in character. I mean, we do have people that play in character, and we tried to develop a role play server, but frankly, that hasn't really come out as we would have hoped. It does see some use, but not very often. So yeah, the Higher Ground just sort of organically evolved towards action, despite my pen and paper background.
Before we continue on, I wanted to add in here, we have two of other staff members just joined in. We have Rowan, Ben, he just joined in, and Michael, a.k.a. Mortis Corpus, the oldest player around, so he just joined in as well. He also played on your server for many years. That's why he wanted to get in on this conversation.
Oh, very cool.
Okay, can you tell us some of the background story of the server and also what you need to get started playing?
Higher Ground went live sometime in 2000, March, April, and May, somewhere in there. And I came on board in October. It's basically set around the core Path of Ascension story, which is questing for the Crown of Immortality, which is rumored to make anyone wears it immortal. Originally, it drove you crazy, but we got rid of that mainly because I lacked the skill at the time to fix the crazy heartbeat script that they used on the crown that was just massively lagging the module, so I ripped it out. But anyway, we're based on that old Path of Ascension story, and then the storyline that we added to it was originally very unfocused and came into focus a little bit later on. We added a couple areas, the maze. And that was just so that something, that was just something for players who are immortal could do after becoming immortal, because the game really ended at immortality. And that was sort of the genesis of the whole idea for legendary levels. The very next thing that was released was the Sithrax, who were just a totally made up reptilian lizard man race, basically. And I did them statting them planning for Legendary Levels to release, which did, I think, sound like a month later. And from there, I got, you know, I started thinking, you know, more in terms of, okay, what other Legendary areas can we have them explore? Naturally, the Outer Planes came to mind. So I basically came up with this concept of this comet called the Harbinger that Asmodeus sent crashing down somewhere in an unspecified location in the realms a long, long, long time ago, destroying an ancient empire in the process and opening a sort of a thin space, a tear in the fabric between the planes, which not only sort of retconned the reason for there being so many crazy powerful extraplanar things running around Ascension in our subraces, but also, you know, served to sort of allow us to introduce other planes that I wanted to move into for and explore for Legendary areas. So from there, we introduced the desert where this Harbinger landed, the rift that it created, including the crater under the city that it destroyed when it struck, which led to a sort of system of caves where the Illithids had gone and basically taken a piece of it with them. That piece is needed to unlock the portal to the Hells, where the players have to go in order to defeat Asmodeus, who is trying to bring basically the Forgotten Realms into the Hells as another layer, something that, according to Source, he's always trying to do. So that's sort of the core story. We then added the Abyss. We hypothesized that Orcus's Wand of Death had been broken, and a number of Demon Lords had each gotten a piece. Each of them was willing to negotiate with players to help them get all the pieces and put it together. Of course, being demons, when the players do this, the Demon Lord turns on them and they fight a more powerful version of that Demon Lord. There's that whole story. As far as Paragon levels go, that's level 80, which we're expanding to in just a week or two. Our storyline for there is going to be end of campaign. We don't foresee going past level 80. So we're doing all the Elder Evils material from 3.0, the Elder Evils source book. We're starting with Father Limic, basically wants to freeze the world. And I believe the last one that we're doing will be Atropos, the undead moon. We saw that as sort of fitting. You know, it's used to wrap up campaigns in pen and paper. So we figured we'd use it to wrap up HG as well. We still have a long ways to go before we're done with that. And we'll still keep adding new classes and, you know, new class abilities and keep tweaking the balance and so on. But that's, you know, sort of the storyline between all those. It's semi-optional in that a lot of our players are action players and they honestly, quite frankly, don't care very much about the story. It is there, however, for anyone who wants it. And I've taken some care to ensure that there's continuity and that it's just not crazy stuff thrown in. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I guess the only other thing is, what does it take to get started playing on your
server? Oh, yes, I'm sorry. We have, we use CEP version 2.3. We've not updated to 2.4. Aside from that, nothing else is required. We do have an optional hack. Achaeus did some coding magic, basically, that allows us to have a hack via the CEP custom hack that is totally optional as far as players are concerned. If you want to just try out the server, you don't need it. But it does allow us to add a ton of stuff that we wouldn't be able to otherwise, including, you know, all the new feats that we've added, the new spells, new appearances, new placeable appearances, new VFX, all of which, thanks to his coding, show alternate default appearances or VFX or what have you to players without the hack. Although the feats they can't see, they have to, use a command to get the listing of the feats that they've taken in the leveler, for example. We actually have here, I'll link it, we have a Getting Started page that explains all of this, as well as an installation page that's designed to kind of, you know, ease players in. We've been trying to recruit more from outside the core Neverwinter Nights community. We have been getting a fair amount of players from the servers that have been closing down, but that's not really how we want to get our players. So we've been recruiting. We just recently started putting up paper flyers in towns, giving our players loot rewards in order to basically paper flyers with, you know, the HG website and a flashy graphic on it around town. You know, we've started posting on other gaming websites, trying to get hits for Massive Multi-Online Role-Playing Game. We've actually got a brand new website that's about to come out. Anyway, so that's the Getting Started page. It shows and explains what's necessary. We also have an installation guide that I think anyone really might find handy, because we have it, you know, kind of tailored to people who are downloading from Good Old Games now that that's available as a digital download. It's not just HD-oriented. So that could come in handy for anyone. It shows, you know, all the system requirements, explains step by step what to do. It tells you to get a new CD key because you can't use the Good Old Games one, so on and so forth. Oh, yes, thank you. There's also, yeah, there's, we've got a number of other, through the years, we've had a ton of very talented players, and they've added all sorts of custom software. We have, as was just messaged to me, there's a loader by Bao that allows us to skip GameSpy entirely. There's all kinds of player logging programs. There's all sorts of other things along those lines to kind of help you hone your play, as we put it in the thread. ARF2 is sort of the all-in-one installer that we have. It will download and install the 1.69 critical update, Higher Ground enhanced hack if you want it, as well as custom client changes if you want them. So we've got it kind of all packaged into one neat little package for our players. It's called ARF2. No, I don't know what the acronym stands for. but yeah, that's something Bao put together, and it is really fantastic. I've used it the last two times I've installed. It is, all of the HD-only content is totally optional, so non-HD players can also use it if they're having trouble installing. I've linked it a couple of times on the bio boards, but I try to avoid doing that too often so it doesn't look like I'm just pimping out the server, if you know what I mean. Yeah. All of this is on the server. Okay, I think that covers everything then.
And poking around a bit, especially on the links that I'm sure we'll put up as well, seeing that you guys have a lot of in-game information on the website, how did you guys set all of that up?
Okay, that's actually a question that's best fielded by Achaeus. My expertise, I mean, I've learned SQL, which is what we use for our databasing, and which is how the data gets from the servers to the website. It's taken out of the SQL database. I don't really understand that process. In fact, I recently posted on someone else's forums. TSM Dude has his Silver Marches forum set up with a server admin subforum, which I would recommend to any server admin, by the way. It talks about security, you know, how you can set up your server with the right CD keys, checking, passwording, you know, who the griefers are, you know, who the troublemakers are, all of that sort of thing.
We do something similar ourselves. We have a setup from our server out to the website too, but I've always kept it somewhat just limited information. What's pertinent? Players online, where they're at, what characters are playing, what level, stuff like that. Looking at what you guys have, you've definitely taken it to the next level, no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, I am not the person who set that up. This is very much a team sport. Here is what Achaeus said. I'll read it out for you. He was involved in setting that up somewhat. The other person who set a lot of that up, Yomi, is not around anymore, at least not for the time being. He may be back later. A lot of our players often are. But what Achaeus said was that it grew organically over time with the number of contributions from our players as well. The in-game servers use NWNX, that's Neverwinter Nights Extender, to dump information into a DAIS, which is then transmitted to a separate web server for display. We actually provide the information both in page format and in XML, which our players can use to build other tools. In addition, we have a number of other players who have created client loggers, which add overlays or other information to help them to their playing. Those generally get their information by parsing the log output from Neverwinter Nights itself. The players with loggers often will then post that information on the web as well in the form of a run summary, you know, to show other players, you know, what damages are best on weapons for that run, what spells are good to cast, how well each class is performing. It's also a huge help when we're, you know, kind of going back and kind of rebalancing our classes to make sure that all classes are playable and useful and enjoyable. Looking at those run logs is unbelievably helpful, though they can be deceptive in some cases. They tend to focus way too much on damage. A lot of players will look at nothing but the damage number in deciding how successful their build is. Excuse me.
Bring out the medics.
So, yeah, unfortunately, beyond that, I can't really go into the technical aspect of how that's set up. I just don't know. I'm still very much learning in all of this, and I will probably never stop learning. Doug, I don't think, has learned nearly as much as I have, but he does bring a lot of knowledge to the table.
All right, I guess we were going to ask you how you classified your world, which I think you've already covered, roleplay, action, adventure. My question is, in addition to that, what brought about the for a while with when I was playing the hardcore servers, we were going to ask you how you classified your world as either RP or action, which you've covered.
Right.
And my question is, in addition, I mean, I have my own viewpoints. I've played your server for over 6 years. So, I love your world. I'd like to hear how you classify it. And in addition to that, hear your opinions and thoughts on what brought about some of the exotic things like hardcore servers, and how you'd classify your world as high, medium, or low magic.
Oh, okay. As far as what brought about features like hardcore, the answer is almost always going to be our players. Most of our really good ideas come from them at some point. Akeus and I have our fair share of inspiration when it comes to implementing things. And we have a lot of, creativity stored up in terms of both having mud / pen and paper / whatever experience in role-playing. But, oftentimes, most of the time, I think, it's a player that comes along and says, hey, this would be cool. Or, this kind of sucks. Why don't you do this and it would be better? I mean, that was sort of the genesis of hardcore, as I remember it. That was definitely the genesis of, say, the player market, a lot of the chat commands. I mean, I could go on and on and on. Most of it is player ideas. So, yeah, I mean, it's honestly, our players deserve a lot of the credit for a lot of our features. As to how I would classify the server in terms of magic, I would say it's definitely high magic, but with a caveat, that being that we go to great pains to make sure that it's balanced all the way up. It's not just some Monty Hall campaign, to use a pen and paper term. It's not grossly imbalanced. It's not just hacking and slashing your way through. If you're not careful and you don't, know the terrain and the enemies, you will run into trouble, oftentimes more trouble than you can handle. So it's definitely high magic, but it at least tries to scale up from lower magic. It still starts out much higher magic in low levels than I would ideally prefer had I to do it over all again.
Here's a good question for you. We talked about you and Doug and running the server like with all the stuff, but how many DMs do you have on staff? And if you'd like to introduce them.
In our scripts, we have right around 30, but as far as being actively on right now, like one of them, Enrith, is in Oslo, and he's learning to be an air traffic controller, so he hasn't been on in months. I mean, he's developed areas for us, and he's still, pops in on the forums once in a while, but, he's not on, he's not DMing. I think actively we have about 18 to 22 staff members logging in on the forums every day. Our forums show 18 right now in the last 24 hours, which is on the low side, but, fairly representative. Well, the four newest are Vicia, Toxin, Natani, and Naorals. And we just got them trained up on Saturday. They're just learning. Helping us with development is Natani again. Mighty Khan helps us. Murphy's Law again does a lot of our documentation. There's Akeus, of course, my co-admin. There's Werehound Silverfang, who also runs his own server. There's, honestly, the list goes on and on and on. A lot of them are still active. And I think the reason is that we don't really recruit DMs per se. Is that we basically go to the players whenever we need more DM coverage and say, okay, who do you guys think should be DMs? And then we get nominations and we pick from among that group, giving a fair amount of weighting, although not final, final say to the number of nominations each gets. That's how we've picked DMs, I think, since 2006, 2007. It's worked out really well. Before then, we were picking DMs based on, who could develop. That was very hit or miss. Baldivard came on during that time. He's been fantastic. He actually, and I still need to put him in the credits for this, I think. he did a lot of the brute force coding on higher ground legendary level system because I didn't want to use 2DAs back then because they were so slow, the 2DA reads. They now have catching, so we've rewritten it to use 2DA reads. But he did, you know, all of the brute force functions for, you know, get name of feat, you know, get his skill cross class, all that stuff. The other listed DMs, Achaeus, Boldivard, Bao, Chainlink, Crimson, Binome, 22, Delphestra, Enrith I mentioned, Exodor, myself, Gollum. There's Hala, he's an Australian DM. Kalo, I am a cutie, and her husband, Felthalus. Kazar, there's Knight Errant. There's Littlekins, there's Mighty Khan, Murphy's Law again, Felthalus. Rain Sank Rump is also around, to my knowledge, still. Saber Girls, Chardelet is still around. There's Star Landra, Storm Chaser, Striker of Chaos. Tyrannothixis, Saber Girl's husband, also a great guy, save for being Canadian. I'm kidding. I always give him crap for that via Saber. It's an inside joke. I have nothing against Canadians. Werehound Silverfang. There's Wolf or Blast and Zeragon, lastly. Nahorl, Natani, Toxin, and Vichia. We try to spread our team all over the globe. We try to get all the guilds on the server represented. And we try to pick people, you know, who are, you know, genuinely good at interacting with people more than any other thing. It's, you know, a great added bonus if they can develop. And in fact, you know, some of them are very good developers. Natani has been doing a whole bunch of our area layouts. He just did Limbo, which looks amazing. I actually linked a screenshot of it on the webpage we're about to put out. We're making a new webpage of the spawning stone in Limbo, which is just awesome looking. I could not have done it even half as well. He's also working on the Father Limic areas, which are, you know, pretty much all ice covered. Did a really, really nice looking ice fortress where he kind of set the Neverwinter Nights 2 placeables into ice rises in the tile set, making it look like the walls had been iced over and still allowing the walls to be walkable per my request so that archers could arch from them. Just fantastic work there. You know, we've been very, very lucky to draw in some of the talent that we have. But basically, we recruit from within only, which is, I think, been a great secret to our success over the years. I think people tend to stay with us more as a result. I think they tend to understand the server that they're developing more more as a result. I think they tend to, as I do, respect, you know, our roots a little bit more also for that fact. I mean, we still have some Abandoned Worlds players popping in from time to time.
Yeah, anyway. It's definitely the best to do the promotion from within, you know, people who are, you know, on your server, they know the content, and obviously they want to be there. That's pretty much the simple truth there.
Hold on one second. I've got answers from a Chaos on 5. Oh, his answer for 5 is very short. You'll be glad. Action Adventure, very high magic. Mention legendary Paragon levels as well. Yeah, I covered that. For answer 6, it was how many DMs do you have on staff? We have about 40 total DMs, about 25 of whom are somewhat or very active.
So what are some of the challenges that you face while running the Persistent World?
Boy, yeah, I thought about this. I guess the two big ones are coordination and balancing. Coordination, we mostly covered, I think, talking about how we have the Subversion repo set up so that we can all work on the mod at the same time. We also have here, let me show you an example. We also have a ton of Google Docs that we use. A lot of the team will have edit access to, and we'll change them as we go. All sorts of tactics to handle coordination, the repo and document sharing being the two biggies. As far as balancing goes, we've got, I suppose I talked about the login, but we place huge emphasis on game balance, not just between you know, the player versus the machine, but between the classes themselves, so that all the classes wind up getting used, and that there's also build options within the classes so that players can kind of, you know, apply their creativity to making characters, find really devious builds, some of which we wind up having to nerf, unfortunately. You know, we try to make the process of building the character as enjoyable as possible, because that's something that I really got a kick out of in both pen and paper and single player. On the same note, since we are talking about challenges, there are some things that we did very, very wrong in our balancing that I would definitely redo if I got the chance. One, as I already mentioned, is our weapons, or at least our item scaling, started out very high. In particular, weapon damages. We have a ton of them on our weapons, and it's to the point where, frankly, to me, it's a little bit silly as a PNP player. We've made it work balance-wise, but had I to do it over again, we would have a lot less damage on the weapons and a lot less, you know, reliance on gear as it relates to progressing your character. I would want more of the progression to be on the character itself, in the attributes of the character. We've tried to move to that as much as possible, given our format. Like with Paragon levels, our set loot items in the Hells and the Abyss will gain new powers depending on what Paragon level the character equipping them is. Like, they'll get a higher stat boost or a higher skill boost or a higher resist amount, for example. So that the scaling, the progression of power is at least partially, you know, placed back onto the player rather than the gear. I think that is probably one of our biggest challenges in terms of balance. The other major balance issue we have is, I think I would be remiss not to mention, player versus player. We severely built up the server as player versus machine and then sort of looked back and said, oh, hey, you know, it would be nice if players could fight against each other, you know, to some effect as well. So when we set up our guild arena and such, we set it up, we had to use, I forgot what the widget is called, a guild combat widget, I think, to apply penalties, and the penalties can be pretty high in some cases to kind of equal out, you know, player AC, which is a little bit on the high side with AB, to equalize saves with, you know, DCs of spells, to get them within a PvP range. And we managed to do that, but had I to do it over again, I would have built it more organically up from the bottom so that we didn't need sort of that tool to step in and make PvP more plausible. I think those pretty much cover the big challenges that we've faced in building. Let me see what Akis had to say on that. He says, there are technical ones, such as making sure our multi-server setup runs well. We keep lots of backups, and we try very hard to make sure that whenever a player has a problem that's the server's fault, we fix it as quickly and thoroughly as possible. There are social ones, though we actually have had very few problems with griefers on ASG thanks to our strong community. We also try hard to make sure that exploits are blocked at the system level so we can keep our rules list as small as possible. Then there are gameplay ones, such as design and balance. Ha, ha, ha. Whenever we create a new area, we always spend weeks or months doing research and planning before we actually put mouse to toolset. That is very true. We look at all kinds of sources and discuss how we want the area to fit into the game and the D&D mythos. When it comes to balance, we almost always hash things out in long DM meetings, which can go on for hours. Yeah, that's the truth. We want the players to have to know the enemies that they're fighting and to have to deal with them in one of a set number of ways. The more powerful the enemy, the fewer the set number of ways there are to deal with it. So, I mean, some idea of that approach. But yeah, just looking at this thing, there are hundreds of hours spent getting all of those numbers on there. It's almost kind of disheartening to look at. I'm so glad it's done. Anyway, that should cover that.
No, I was just going to say that, I mean, it really shows, and it's really interesting to see when people put that level of detail in. For our next question, I think we've kind of covered the custom content you guys have come up with pretty well.
Yep.
Given the level of custom content that you see on servers such as your own, where do you see the community going in the upcoming years?
That is a tough question. Oh, yeah. As far as the custom content, I think the only things I haven't mentioned already is stuff that Akis and I made ourselves and stuck into CEP. Basically, with his help, I learned how to rip models out of tile sets. He credited me with, I think, 1,200 placeables, but I think he did at least 300 of them. And he put in a ton of VFX as well as all the PRC VFX into CEP 2.3. So that was a huge boon for us because it meant our players did not have to rely on alt visual effects, alt placeable appearances, and right. such. So it saved us a lot of time, because every time we wanted to put in a new visual effect that didn't have an alternate set already for it, he had to go in and make an engine edit to a plugin to make sure that the right alternate visual showed. So it was a real pain. Yeah. Anyway, as far as where I see the Neverwinter Nights community going is a really hard question. It's obviously been getting smaller. I don't like that it's getting smaller. I hope that it will not continue to do so. I don't think it will, even though the master servers now appear to be down, at least for a while. I don't know how permanent that is, despite the ongoing debate on the bio boards. I guess I still see the Neverwinter Nights community around in, say, 5 years, possibly the same size. I'd like to see it bigger. We're trying to take steps in that direction by advertising outside of the Neverwinter Nights community, as I think I mentioned already. You know, doing paper flyers, advertising on gaming websites, things of that nature. We're going to be pushing that much, much harder once we have our own front page set up. We have that mostly put together now. We're just working on, I think, a little JavaScript to make the background switchable and things of that nature. But, yeah, no, I could definitely see it lasting for a long, long time. But I think a lot of it depends on how much effort is made by the community in the next few years to, you know, kind of keep plugging. I'm seeing a lot of that, though. I mean, if you look around, there's NWNCQ, there's Neverwinter Shader. I mean, there's Elgar L's client extension. Virus Man is still writing plugins. I mean, there's a lot of people in the community doing a lot of things. I mean, to not even mention all the custom content that's still being made for it. I still pop into the BioBoard custom content forums to see the custom content of the month contest and vote on it. And I know that that whole contest setup was nominated as one of the three things great about the community for some award or other this year. And it definitely is. So, I mean, there's still a lot of people doing a lot of good things. So I hope and at least somewhat expect that Neverwinter Nights will still be around and doing well in 5 years. I mean, it all depends, but I'm optimistic.
Well, that's good to hear. We are too, obviously. Otherwise, we'd be having second thoughts about what we're doing. But
yeah. Oh, yeah. I would have mentioned, you guys say that it sort of goes without saying since we're doing the podcast right now. Sorry.
So, events. I've played in events throughout the years on your server, and I've played in some very, very cool events. I was particularly fond of the event where you gave out the experience shards. I want to say it was Halloween. So, what goes into regularly scheduled events, and how do you organize that?
Those are surprisingly on the fly. We're actually running one right now, Storm is, I think I mentioned. Pale Knight event, I don't know if you're familiar, but Pale Knight at least claims to be the mother of a whole bunch of demons in Source. She's this kind of ethereal, insubstantial, ghost-like creature. Might be an Oberith, might be a demon, no one really knows. We had her set up to be a random encounter, but we didn't fully implement all of the 5 demon lords / mini lords that we wanted to put in as mini encounters, so we've been using them to run events. Malkanthit is one of the other ones that we use, the Queen of the Succubi. And, you know, typically a DM will just, you know, volunteer. We've been coordinating with Bin So Bad, one of the players on our server, who's also actually helped us a lot with our advertising as well. And pretty much they just run, our players on our server call them runs. They basically, you know, go out to an area or a set of areas planning to complete the objective in that area, be it killing a boss, a mini boss, getting tagged for a portal. And on the way, you know, the DM will start having fun with them, spawning other things, eventually leading to a confrontation with the mini boss in question. Because, yeah, it's very decentralized. Our DMs pretty much just say, hey, I want to run this event, you know. Okay, here's the loot you should do. Like, Storm just messaged me asking about the one running tonight, and I told him, you know, spawn this, this, and this for loot, and, you know, chance of this, blah, blah, blah. I mean, we try to schedule events partly as advertising stunts so that we can post on the forum saying, hey, look at this flashy poster. This is what our players are doing. Partly, you know, just so that the players can enjoy it. The event that I thought you were talking about, Goblins versus Kobolds, was another way that we devised to get over the barriers of our semi-broken PvP, where players had to roll up goblins or kobolds using custom scripted system and then had to fight it out. And it was very entertaining because they only got a very limited subset of weapons. And there's actually a few players on the server who love playing kobolds. So there was a lot of hamming around. That was a good time. We set that up, I think that was in the Guild Arena. But, you know, we'll do other things as well. We'll do like a scavenger hunt. We'll do just, you know, DM run participation. Sometimes the DM will log in and just spawn things for fun on a party, you know, not getting too crazy about it. And then spawning loot afterwards if it took up a substantial amount of their time. Yeah, T1K is one of the players who loves kobolds. He definitely deserves a mention there. But yeah, I mean, that's sort of how we do things. We keep it kind of loosely scheduled, and our DMs just volunteer as they have time to run events.
To finish up, I want to say thanks again for coming on. I know it's kind of funny. We took the podcast over about 6 months ago, and you know, we've been going through getting a lot of we had a lot of interviews queued up when we took over, so we're finally getting through the ones we had queued up. But I know that throughout our almost 4 years in existence at Realms of Trinity, I have had several people actually say to us that we're like the Neverwinter Nights 2 version of Higher Ground. And I never, because, you know, in listening to you talk, you know, I'll say this, listening to you talk, your vision and the way you have your server set up, I would say definitely in a significant amount, just your the way you do things is very similar to the way we do things. And which has contributed to a lot of our success and what's contributing to your great success. So I wanted to say, you know, it is a pleasure to have you on the show and actually get to talk to you about all the stuff that you do, all the stuff that you've gotten done over the last, you know, umpteen years now that you've been alive. Just having you on, it's an honor to get to talk to you and talk to you about these things.
It's definitely a pleasure for me as well. I unfortunately have not had a chance to play your server, mainly because I, you know, kind of gave up on playing Neverwinter Nights 2 back before they got everything fixed. And when they finally did, I kind of still wanted to move HG to it, but we have so much invested in Neverwinter Nights 1 that there was just a lot of inertia there. So
yes,
I've been kind of focusing on Neverwinter Nights 1. I have absolutely nothing against the Neverwinter Nights 2 community. I think there's some fantastic looking things. And also some very nice servers there. I just haven't had a chance to play many of them. I haven't even played the main campaign past, what was the first expansion? The
Mask of Betrayer.
Yeah, no, I finished that. I really liked that expansion, but I just, by the time the next one rolled around, I was kind of getting frustrated with the whole, you know, having to download Walkmash thing. And I was just like, you know what? No.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it definitely, I understand from a perspective of once you get locked into running a persistent world and, you know, putting all the effort and time into it, you really don't have time to get around. I mean, I've tried, I got a list of servers that I want to go on at some point and just, yep, you know, check them out. And, you know, our last interview, we interviewed the Rise of Sauron server. It's a Lord of the Rings based server for Neverwinter 2. You know, and I haven't been, you know, I can't even get off our stuff because we're still developing full time. So, you know, I know how it is. Just to finish up, is there like any last thing you'd like to share briefly with the podcast audience? Like we may not have covered, or just any final thoughts?
Well, let's see. Just to elaborate on that a bit, since it's going up on our webpage soon, I'll actually just quote you what it says to keep it short. We understand the enjoyment many players derive from experimenting with different playstyles and character builds. In order to maximize opportunities for such enjoyment, we constantly strive to make every class, feat, spell, skill, and ability useful during play, while balancing the requirements of such abilities to ensure players a wide range of options in designing and playing any given type of character. I think what goes overlooked a lot in that equation is that oftentimes you have to nerf in order to get it right. Because you can't always increase the power of every ability to the highest level ability, mainly because even if you did get it right, there's always going to be the next ability coming along. But most of the time you won't get it right. And after more playtests, you'll find that another ability is more powerful. It's a constant balancing act, and you have to be willing to make selected nerfs, despite how players screech about them, in order to keep balance sort of in check and to maintain the balance between the classes and to develop build diversity. That's something that players tend not to understand. They say, you know, but, you know, when you nerf this ability, you're taking away that design option for me. Our answer to that, which they usually will not want to understand because they're talking about their favorite class when they're posting, is that, you know, we have to nerf that in order to make other build choices equally viable. Otherwise, every player, at least all the action players we cater to, will just choose the most powerful option. That's how the incentives line up. So that's something that's, I think, probably worth mentioning. We are a party play focused server, though we're kind of moving away from that now because the player base has gotten smaller. Although we've reversed that trend in the last month or two, we've actually been seeing more players online, along with quite a few returning vets. Oftentimes our players will, you know, take a break and go play like World of Warcraft, but most of them wind up coming back, even ones that would surprise you. So let's see. We've talked about Higher Ground Enhanced. We've talked about ARF 2. There's Sim Tools, of course. That's a chat command system. I don't know if that's of any interest to you, but that's on the Vault as well. It was developed on Higher Ground. It basically gives our players a lot of command style abilities that are, you know, familiar to users of IRC, MUD, you know, that kind of format. AK has designed a lot of them to be that way. And they've gone, you know, sort of well beyond the public script set. We have, I think, 120-ish sub-races right now. They are not really sub-races so much as they are races. They kind of overwrite whatever the base race is. So we have, like, a Freedy as one of them. And there, I mean, this is one of the major nitpicks I have with our level of immersion, is that there's a lot of really weird sub-races with strange appearances walking around. It is an action server, so on the one hand, immersion isn't mission critical, but I don't like to kind of dismiss it. So that's where the whole Harbinger tearing a veil between the planes and allowing in all sorts of strangeness sort of comes into play as far as justifying the strangeness there. But yeah, we have different tiers of sub-races: secret, ultra-rare, beyond ultra-rare. As players level up, they get active more. They can reincarnate their characters with our reincarnation system to be a new sub-race, losing only a smaller chunk of their XP as they do so. And then they can kind of take advantage of all the various abilities and feats and such that sub-race has to offer. You know, some of them will have elemental immunities or resistances. I know I mentioned our spell system, at least in passing, and how Achaeus pretty much rewrote it all. That's also allowed us to add dozens and dozens of new spells via the Higher Ground Enhanced hack, the optional hack I mentioned. I mean, we've got most of the spells are pulled from pen and paper, like Rack, Gem Bomb, all sorts of really cool spells like that. But yeah, he's been fantastic as far as adding new spells. He's done most of that. He's added, you know, spells for Blackguard, spells for Assassins. He's added, which I guess are standard fare in Neverwinter Nights 2, but not in 1. And then he's just added, you know, a whole bunch of new spells like Frost Fog. I don't know. System. We've got truly randomized loot. I mean, every single random loot item that pops out is re-randomized by our system to, you know, create new attributes unique to that item, so that even vets who have been playing for years have a chance to find something they've never seen before, which I think is a big highlight. Got persistent banking, we've got a player market, we've got all kinds of weapons crafting, we've got item crafting to allow players to tweak those randomized items. We've got a gem system for weapons, and I'm going to close it up there because I don't want... Oh, one last... Achaeus' answer to number 10, his enjoyable moments, the sheer joy of creating things. I love it when we release something new and the players look at it and go, whoa. His answer to number 11, is there anything else you'd like to share with the podcast audience? We have a lot of upcoming content to look forward to, such as Limbo, Mechanist, the Lairs of Hades, and of course, the Elder Evils. Okay, so done. Sorry, I just wanted to, he took the trouble to type them out, so I wanted
With all that, it's the most important line of the whole podcast. I'm giving you the final line.
Get in game and level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of the Realms of Trinity, who are solely responsible for its contents.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is copyright 2011.